this day, when many in the Christian world celebrate the life and resurrection of a Savior, we look at questions of hope to see what it means in our times. For while Unitarian Universalists don't talk of salvation all that often, I would suggest that one of the ways we might understand the term is to connect it to hope. Hope, at least according to Webster's, is to cherish a desire with an expectation of fulfillment. There are some hopes we can do nothing about, except perhaps be reasonable in our expectations, perhaps not get too attached to the form that that fulfillment might take. To hope is to cherish a desire with an expectation of fulfillment. But sometimes our hope needs a little help from us. For there to be any hope, we might need to do a little something ourselves. To hope is to cherish a desire with an expectation of fulfillment. Sometimes what we need is hope, and the ability to find and maintain hope can be our salvation. Sometimes to be saved is to hope. Sometimes to hope is to be saved. What will salvation look like in our times, and what are we called on to do to help bring forth rebirth and renewal in our society, in our nation, and in our world? Many today live without hope. People in this room, perhaps. People in the wider world, from here in Central Florida to the other side of the world. And if we look at the headlines, there is certainly much of which to despair. And I suppose that if one wants to, one is free to spend one's time in despair. But there are other choices. I would argue that we can make the choice to have hope instead, that this is better for our world and better for ourselves. Can I stand here and say for certain that if you are hopeful that everything will turn out okay? Yes and no. It depends in part on what you mean by turning out okay. If you mean that everything will turn out the way you want, the answer is no. If you mean will everything turn out in a way from which a new path can be found, then the answer is yes. Let's say, just to be modest, that your hope is for world peace. Seeing the state of the world, you might decide it's impossible, give up and spend your time in despair. You might emerge out of your despair-driven funk occasionally just long enough to make cynical remarks that drag everyone else into your gloom as well. Nothing in that scenario is likely to advance the cause of world peace, nor, frankly, is it likely to make you feel any better. So let's say you decide to hope for world peace. Will it be achieved in your lifetime? Not likely. Can you make a difference in your small corner of the room? Probably. There's a story that's often told in environmental circles that's attributed to Lauren Isley that I assume some of you have already heard. It's about a person who went walking on the beach, and up ahead they saw someone repeatedly bending down and standing up and throwing something. Bending down, standing up, and throwing something. And as they got closer, what became obvious that this person was leaning down and picking up one starfish at a time and tossing it out into the ocean, one by one in an endless and seemingly hopeless task. "What are you doing?" called the walker. "Throwing these starfish into the sea." "I mean, why?" "Because the tide is going out and the sun is coming and they're going to dry out." "But it's hopeless. You can't possibly save them all. What you're doing doesn't matter. And with that, the tosser leaned down, picked up the next starfish, and gave it a toss, and replied, "It matters to that one." Hope may not save the world, but it could save your spirit. When I talked with the children, I told them they could become more hopeful by practicing patience and courage and persistence. I found this idea that these three qualities support hope on a website several years back, a website for Spirituality and Health magazine. And it talked about hope as a spiritual practice. It said, quote, "Hope is a positive and potent spiritual practice with the power to pull us through difficult times. It is usually described with light metaphors, a ray, a beam, a glimmer of hope, a break in the clouds, the light at the end of the tunnel. It is often discovered in unexpected places." It continues, "Hope can be learned with practice. Certain attitudes support it. One is patience, the ability to tolerate delays, a willingness to let events unfold in their own time. The other is courage, an attitude of confidence, even when facing the unknown. And a third is persistence, the determination to keep going no matter what happens." We have hope when we can say, "All will be well," and we mean it. End quote. Some of us may be more hopeful or patient or courageous or persistent by nature, and some of us have to work a little harder at it. But I would suggest that hope is a human need, and we need to recognize it and cultivate it and honor it. The spring holidays carry a message of hope. The first day of spring a month ago brought us longer days and shorter nights. In its pagan roots, the celebration of the spring equinox is about the rebirth of spring and the life returning to the earth. The Jewish celebration of Passover also deals with hope, the promise of something better on the other side of slavery, on the other side of wandering in the desert, the other side of being willing to be changed. Soon the day will arrive. In the Christian scriptures, Easter is about the life and death and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth, who is, to his followers, hope incarnate. In three of the four Gospels in the Christian scriptures, Jesus appears to the disciples after his death. In the fourth, the Gospel of Mark, from which I read, there is the question of the double ending. There are different theories about why some versions have the additional text and others do not. In the first ending, the women approach the tomb the day after the Sabbath to anoint Jesus. They find the tomb open and a young man in white robes who tells them that Jesus has risen and gone before them to Galilee. And then the women came out and ran away from the tomb because they were frightened out of their wits. And they said nothing to a soul, for they were afraid. The original author left it there. Maybe because it was true. Maybe for suspense and drama. Maybe the last page was simply missing from a copy of the manuscript and it got passed down in incomplete form. There are lots of theories about this. But why did the second ending get added? Again, there are many theories. I think it's because the first ending is ultimately unsatisfying. While the women were told that Jesus has risen, that is not the message that the reader is left with. The reader is left with the message, they were frightened out of their wits. This is a message of uncertainty and fear rather than of hope, and the human spirit needs hope. It did then, and it does now. Many people today are troubled by the events of our world. There are so many issues in so many areas. Many feel we're going in the wrong direction on environmental concerns, on issues of war and peace, economic justice, respect for diversity. All of these impact the questions of how 7 billion people can share this fabulous planet Earth. It's easy to despair. Having hope does not come easy in our time. We have to cultivate it. But because it is a human need, we will need to recognize it, cultivate it, and honor it. We can choose to stay in the first ending of the story, in which we are frightened out of our wits, or we can write a better ending to our story. Now, because some Unitarian Universalists have trouble relating to the Easter story in its literal form, I would like to invite you to listen to it again in its metaphorical form. So here is my version of the second ending of Mark, changed into rather new humanistic language. For Jesus, I have substituted hope. For Mary of Magdala, I have used simply one, as in the one who did something. For the disciples, I have used the companions of hope. I have not removed all of the biblical language. You have to do some of the work here. But try to listen to this as metaphor, as an invitation for us to open ourselves to hope. Try to imagine that you have been a companion of hope, one who has dreamed great dreams for the world, but those hopes have been dashed, and you find yourself in despair and in mourning. You are afraid, afraid for yourself and afraid for your world, afraid to hope again. Now listen. Having risen in the morning on the first day of the week, hope appeared first to the one from whom hope had cast out all evils. That one then went to those who had been the companions of hope, who were in mourning and tears, and told them. The companions did not believe it when it was said that hope was still alive and that the one had seen hope. After this, hope appeared in another form to two of them as they were on their way into the country. These went back and told others who did not believe them either. Lastly, hope appeared to the companions themselves while they were at dinner. Hope reproached them for their incredulity and obstinance because they had refused to believe those who had seen hope after hope had risen. And hope said to them, "Go out to the whole world, proclaim the good news to all creation that all who hope will be saved. Those who do not have hope will be condemned. These are the signs that will be associated with believers in my name, and that is hope. They will cast out evils. They will have the gift of communication. They will be courageous. They will be able to do things they did not believe they could do. They will reach out their hands and help others to heal." And so hope, after speaking to them, assumed a rightful place in the vision of the world as it could be and as it should be. And the companions went out and preached everywhere, hope working with them and confirming the work by the signs that accompanied it. Too many people today are in despair, are in mourning, are afraid. They refuse to see that the opportunity for hope still exists. This despair is too easy. It is too lazy. It is too selfish. Of course, we will have our moments of despair, our difficult times, but ultimately the world needs the hope that is available. The world needs to recognize it, embrace it, and honor it. The world needs us, to create hope when and where we can, beginning in our own hearts. This may take practice, may take hard work, it may not come easy. It may require something of us. It may require patience and courage and persistence. But sometimes this may be what we need, and it may be what someone else needs from us. Sometimes what is needed is hope, and the ability to find and maintain hope can be our salvation. We find in this added ending to our story that we are not only called to have hope, but we are called to act out of that place of hope. Hope is necessary, but it is not enough. Something is required of us, the companions of hope. We are called to make hope real in the world, to recognize it, embrace it, and share it with the world. And that hope that exists, where is it? It does not exist outside of you. It is something you create, sometimes by an act of will, sometimes by practice. We create it by increasing our capacity for patience and courage and persistence. Easter, springtime, is a time of hope, a reminder to our weary spirits of the renewal that is possible, a call to see what within us is in need of resurrection, an opportunity to be born once again to the wonders of this life that we share.